नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम् कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 8 टेक्स्ट 10 अनुभ्यश्च महाभ्यश्च शास्त्रेभ्य कुशलो नरा सर्वथा सरम आददया पुष्पेभ्य इव षट्पदा Anubhya, from the smallest, cha, and Mahadbhya, from the greatest, cha, also, Shastrebhya, from religious scriptures, Kushala, intelligent, Nara, man, Sarvata, from all, Sharam, the essence, Adadya, should take, Kuspebhya, from the flowers, Eva, like, Shatpada, the honeybee. Translation, just as the honeybee takes nectar from all flowers, big and small, an intelligent human being should take the essence from all religious scriptures. Purport, in human society, the original knowledge is called Veda, and the essential part of Veda or knowledge is Krishna consciousness. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Vedaischa sarvair ahameva vedya. From the honeybee, an intelligent human being should learn to take the essence or nectar of all knowledge. A honeybee does not waste its time trying to carry away an entire bush or garden, but rather takes the essential nectar. We may thus study the difference between the honeybee and the ass, who carries heavy loads. Education does not mean to become an intellectual ass carrying heavy loads of useless knowledge. Rather, one should accept the essential knowledge that leads to an eternal life of bliss and understanding. Hare Krishna. At the present time, people generally have a sectarian concept of religion, and there is no scientific understanding of the absolute truth. Such complacent, dogmatic, sectarian religionists can certainly learn something from the example of the honeybee given in this verse. Anubhyascha, Mahadbhyascha, Shastrebhya, Kushalo Nara, Sarvata, Sharamadadyat, Pustrebhya, Iva Satpada. Just as the honeybee takes nectar from all flowers, big and small, an intelligent human being should take the essence from all religious scriptures. So we often hear the term nectar used in Krishna consciousness. Nectar seekers. The devotees are nectar seekers. They're looking for the sweetest taste. They're looking for the essence of all existence. As we know, Krishna, Lord Krishna, is the essence of all existence. He's the essence of all Vedic knowledge, and Veda Shara, the cream of the Vedic knowledge, that is Bhagavatam, that is Krishna, Bhagavat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Vedaschas sarvam hamme vaveja Vedanta krit Veda Vedeva Chaham. By all the Vedas am I to be known, Krishna said. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna is the he's the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti madbhava jantimam buddha bhava samanvita. Everything emanates from me, Krishna says. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, the material world is very vast, and we are very small and insignificant, tiny living entities. And there seems to be a vast amount of knowledge available, the vast amount of activities that one can do in the material world, plenty to keep a person busy his whole life, many, many lifetimes. In fact, a living entity can go on taking birth perpetually in the material world. And of course, the nature of transmigration from one body to another is that one forgets his previous birth. Generally it is like that, although there are some cases of remembrance of one's previous birth, but generally it is forgotten. So therefore that each birth seems like a whole new life, a whole new experience. When a living entity forgets that he's been through that whole cycle of activities previously and can have been through it millions of times even. Of course one may say, well, different species, different experience. So why not try to experience all facets of creation, of material creation. But as scriptures point out, Prabhupada points out, there's nothing new under the sun. It is just a repetition of the same sort of activities. And even though different species may have, slightly different forms and, slightly different types or ways of doing things, broadly speaking, they're engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. I mean, this is the main task or the main work of a living entity when he has a material body. He has to search for food for himself and for his, family. We can see, in a human society, human being is going out to work, especially the male members of the species. Generally, their function is to, earn a livelihood and support their wife and children. And we can see the bird also. Generally the female is, bringing up, producing and bringing up the offspring, that generally. Of course, the roles in human society have become, a bit muddled up. Many unusual things, you could say, happening. Same-sex marriage. And they have their also offspring. They can, may have their offspring by some means or another. They manage to get them. This is a somewhat unusual. It's not a kind of traditional situation. The women generally are, the females are looking after the offspring, And of course, that the offspring is generated, you know, of course, through sexual activity, offspring is generated, but within the body of the female, the offspring generally is developed within or else, you know, in some way, like, what is it? Kangaroos? What are they called?
Marsupials.
They have the pouch on the front of the body for, you know, developing the offspring. And other species may have some, you know, different, somewhat different systems. But generally that is a female is doing like that. So if we look, say, the bird, female is generally staying in the nest, you know, to, but that, in that case, of course, eggs are laid, so the eggs have to be kept warm, the nest has to be built, female is staying to, you know, keep the eggs warm so they'll hatch, and the male's duty is to go and search for food. He's collecting worms or whatever, you know, and they're bringing them back and feeding to the darling little, you know, chicklets that are coming out and feeding his wife and so forth. So, I mean, it's a different, you know, bit different from species to species, but broadly speaking, it's similar that everyone's going to sleep at a certain time, isn't it? Generally speaking, sometime. I mean, human beings are pretty unregulated in the, they'd be sleeping any time, day or night. But in the animal kingdom, bird kingdom, you know, generally when it's dark, they would be sleeping. Of course, there are ones that stay awake at night for whatever, but different species. But you know, broadly speaking, it's like that. And so eating, sleeping, mating, of course, mating is already covered, really. Defending also, birds and beasts, they can defend themselves in different ways, and various kinds of fighting also going on in the animal kingdom, competition for food or just killing one another for food. So similar, you know, whatever species you get into, similar type of activities are there. So in that sense, nothing special to go, you know, to take birth as a seagull and, you know, soar above the waves, or an albatross. Albatross, they can fly, you know, thousands of miles. But there are many bird species. We were reading the book, what do you call that book? Nature's IQ. Huh? Interesting book compiled by some devotees in Hungary. But there, you know, bird species that flies, you know, thousands of miles. In different seasons, or they go thousands of miles for mating. It's interesting actually to read, but it's just we can learn a bit more about the material world in that way. So I think there's some species of salmon, as mentioned, they have to go back to the place of their birth or something to mate. They have to travel upstream, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of miles to some place where they mate. And then again, you know, the young ones are born, they travel down the river, they go even to the sea, but then they have to go back again with great difficulty. But somehow, you know, they're programmed, but quite amazing, you know, the feats of the material energy, which are ultimately, of course, the feats of the Supreme Lord. But still, the broadly speaking, the same picture is there. So therefore, no need to be transmigrating to each and every species. And, you know, sometimes devotees will be preaching, you're not careful, you'll fall down, you become a dog or whatever, you become a bird. And people say, what's wrong with that? You know, why not? You know, bird is free, can fly in the sky. But this is illusion, you know. We just because we cannot take off and fly in the sky, we think that the bird is is very fortunate. Of course, we can, you know, by buying airplane ticket and so forth. But then there are all sorts of problems connected with that, and as we're finding out, you know, environment is being destroyed and so on and so forth by, you know, so much pollution and machinery and pollution created by human society. And even when you get in the plane, you know, okay, you get the similar experience to a bird in the sense that you can see down from a high point, but, you know, big deal, you know. If you're down here, you can see the cars, you know, at, you know, close quarters. And if you're up there, you can see them, and the tiny dots are moving on the road. And if you get really up there, of course, you can't really see anything at all except some clouds and sky, maybe the sun like that. So, nothing especially wonderful. It gets pretty boring, actually. Sit and look out the plane window for, you know, the whole flight. Nothing special. Maybe the first or second time, it seems, wow, wonderful. But, you know, after hundreds of times, thousands of times, it becomes pretty tedious. And anyway, you know, inside the plane, of course, inside the plane, the same human activities are going on. But at least we can get a sort of bird's eye view. And at least it shows you that, you know, there's no reason to take birth as a bird. So here from the scriptures we learn that, you know, it's just repetition. Repetition of birth and death, repetition of eating, mating, sleeping, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So the process of Krishna consciousness is to free us from this repetition, this tedious repetition of having to take birth, and then the body has to grow, and, you know, painful, and then you have to and take so many responsibilities in adult life, just like that song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, huh? What's it? Buliya Tomari. That when I was in the womb, then it was very packed up and very uncomfortable, and some, you know, sort of entities were biting. My body was very tender, and they were biting it, and it was dark and uncomfortable. And I was thinking, and I remembered the Lord in that position, because a living entity often, when he's in great difficulty, he will remember God. Please, God, help me. Huh? When he's confident and, you know, things seem to be going well, he forgets about God. You know, what does God have to do with it? There's no God. I'm the enjoyer. I'm the most intelligent. But suddenly he's put into difficulty by some reversal of the material energy, some unpredictable circumstance. Then please, God, please help. Or please save my, you know, relatives or friends or whatever. So difficult situation can put a person, you know, make a person more conscious of the need to depend on a higher power, on the Supreme Being. So that's why they pray in times of difficulty. So like that Bhaktivinoda was saying, so it was very unpleasant, and I was praying to the Lord, please, when I get out from here, I promise I'll serve you and not forget you. And in this way, you know, I won't have to take birth again. I won't have to be in another womb and suffer like this. But he said, after getting out of the womb, then my relatives were bringing presents and patting me and saying, what a lovely child, and pampering in so many ways. And I was thinking, this material life is very nice, wonderful. I'm the center of attention, everyone's serving me. Which is basically the situation, isn't it? The child is helpless, so everyone has to serve the child, to help the child to somehow or other, you know, function, and gradually, you know,
the body will grow, and more and more he'll be able to take care of it himself. But that initial stage requires constant, help, constant service. So he's saying, I became illusioned, and I was thinking like that. Material life is very nice. But then gradually, my body began to grow, and there were various pains, and we see small children, their teeth are growing, they're crying, and their bodies are very tender, they fall over and hurt themselves, or they fight with one another and hurt themselves like that. So often they're crying. Hmm? We often hear like that. The parents, when they have young children, many sleepless nights, isn't it, in the early years, because the child's body is growing, and it creates pain and suffering for the child. And then he said that my parents forced me to go to school. I didn't want to go, but they forced me. The prophet relates how his mother hired a man to come and tie a rope around his waist and take him to school because he didn't want to go to school. And probably all of us had that experience, at least in the first time. I remember the first day or two I had to go to school. It was a very frightful and terrifying experience. Huge, building, cold building, and so many people you don't know rushing here and there, and these teachers, like enormous threatening personalities. It's probably why in the junior school, small school, what do you call it here? Primary school, huh? So usually the teacher, maybe ladies, a little bit more gentle with the children, less terrifying than the men. So like that. But even then, some of the ladies, they're older, and the children also are frightened of them. So then, he said, gradually I grew up, and then in youth, I was troubled by lusty desires, and then my parents made me get married, and then I had suddenly so many responsibilities. I had to work, and it was very heavy responsibility. And then gradually the body has become older and older. I'm again suffering so many pains, and finally in old age I'm remembering you, and I'm thinking, I forgot you the whole life, Bulya Tomare, I forgot you, but now I want to remember you in old age. Certainly this is good. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a great devotee. At least most of his life he was absorbed in the activities of preaching and Krishna consciousness. And even the younger years, we consider this as his lila. He didn't appear in a strict Vaishnava family, so far I know. Bhaktivinoda's family, but maybe not vegetarian family. Still we consider, he's an eternally liberated soul, a great soul, of maybe some early pastimes, but we always consider him to be Krishna conscious, always Krishna conscious, and certainly, even from an external point of view, he was absorbed in those activities most of his life, Krishna conscious activities. So, but he's taking the position of a conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is generally just forgetful of Krishna the whole time that he's in the material world. But if he, by good fortune, can remember the Lord in the last years, well, that's certainly better than not at all. And there's every chance, even if a person, last in the later stages of his life, takes to Krishna consciousness. If it's not even, it's not such a long period, still, you know, every possibility to go back to Godhead. Of course, that's not to say that, you know, and many people do say like that in Hindu society, for example, that, you know, well, that's for later stage, you know, this religious activity, and you know, when I'm old, I'll do that. But that's not the correct understanding. Correct understanding you get from Prahlad Maharaj, who told his school friends that, you know, now you've got the human form of life, and it's special for self-realization. Therefore, right from the very beginning, you should engage in Krishna conscious activities. This is desirable. This is preferable. So people may say like that, you know, when I'm younger, you know, I want to enjoy the world. And then when I'm old and, you know, bodies cannot enjoy, and then, you know, more religious activity. And of course that often is true because, you know, people have many responsibilities. In their younger years, they may not be able to devote so much time, you know, in hearing, chanting, and just pure spiritual activities. And in the older age, won't be able to work so much, and not so much as expected. You know, the dependents don't expect so much. Of course, if someone is very wealthy, the dependents may be thinking, well, let him go, you know, let him depart as soon as possible. We can divide up the assets among ourselves. And not everyone's like that, of course, but some people do take care of their elderly parents, especially like in a Vedic society, Indian society, that's there more. Unfortunately, in the Western society, often people don't care about their, you know, elderly parents or relatives. They just put them in some old age home or whatever. It's called, there's a term for it actually, ageism, I think it's called. Ageism, at least in the UK they use that term, you know, which is a kind of, considered a kind of discrimination against older people, harsh treatment of older people, because they, you know, they can't produce anymore, and, you know, you have to maintain them. I mean, at least a young child, you know, the parents, out of love, let's say they're maintaining their offspring out of love, of course, but there's also a motivation that, you know, we bring up these children and they'll support us in our old age. I mean, that's just part of the whole equation. In India, you know, sometimes they, you know, we know they, you know, not good. China also, I think, because they have that one child policy. If they see it's a girl, they might, you know, abort. You know, just to keep the male children, the idea is that, you know, the male child be able to work and produce income, and a female child, this will cost us money, you know, India has to pay big dowry and so forth. And, you know, you hear these stories, there's an argument over dowry, and the, you know, daughter-in-law was burned, you know, they threw kerosene or petrol on her and just set her alight because of, you know, her father, he hadn't been able to pay the, you know, required dowry. He promised, I'll pay it in the future, but then he didn't pay, you know. And so it's very materialistic, this kind of thinking, of course, and horrible, demoniac, in fact. But, you know, we can say that the expectation, you know, the desire to kind of work and put energy into the children, you know, is there because it seems that they'll be productive in the future. But old people, I mean, you know, what, how are they going to help us? They're just a burden, you know. Some people will think like that and put them away somewhere in an old folks' home and just. But of course, actually in Vedic society, old people were to be cared for because they're very wise. They could give so much knowledge. And, if the men were considered to be capable of preaching and so forth, that they were brahminically enough inclined, they could become sannyasis. and distribute transcendental knowledge. And if they weren't on that level, at least they could give some good guidance to the younger people of society, you know, according to their particular experience in life. And the elderly ladies also, you know, if the husband would take sannyas, then they would remain at home. And they would, you often see in the Hindu families, the grandmother is very religious and, you know, does the puja and encourages the younger people to be spiritually minded, you know, which is very good, a very good, nice influence. So, you know, Vedic society is a very complete kind of structure and system, but here in the Western world, you know, they're tampering too much with social structure, and you know, there are so many problems as a result. So many divorces, and you know, old people just packed away there unhappily, and so younger people not getting the benefit of their experience. Therefore, younger people, you know, think they know everything, and making a lot of mistakes and creating problems for each other. Probably that, you know, like the big families, Hindu families, with the elder people there, and it helps to keep the marriages stable, isn't it? Older people will also help look after the children, and so there's not so much pressure on the younger mothers like that. But here we see in the Western society, well, that's not there. So the, you know, the just the husband wife living together, and you know, they become over familiar. Many cases start arguing with each other. Then the pressure of having to look after the children all the time becomes very great, and then divorce becomes high rate of divorce. So the bigger family, you know, this is much more helpful, that ladies could associate together, the men could associate together. They can help one another in their duties. The ladies can help each other to look after the children. Men can help each other with their work, and the older people will be giving, you know, good guidance. So this is Vedic society, but still the essence of it is there should be Krishna consciousness, there should be spiritual understanding, there should be spiritual practice, spiritual understanding and spiritual practice. So even though there may be so many responsibilities, nevertheless time has to be put aside for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Otherwise, it's considered that one is simply wasting the human birth. He's living like an animal or a bird. He's just concerning himself with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So he'll just pass through the human form and he'll go to some other species as a result. You know, nothing special he's done here. He just come here and behave like an animal. So result, become animal, become bird, become whatever. So one has to understand this distinction between human life and other species, and the importance of human life, and the facility which is being offered to go to the spiritual world. Such a wonderful facility. So we learn about that from Bhagavatam, we learn about it from Gita, and we learn how to structure our lives so that we can develop the kind of consciousness that is needed to live in the spiritual world. But one who lives in the spiritual world is Krishna conscious, is always serving Krishna, is always remembering Krishna, and is not thinking, let me enjoy what he's saying, let me please Krishna, let Krishna be satisfied, let Krishna's devotees be pleased. So there's always that mentality of being a servant of the servant of the servant. It's a very pure mentality. And therefore a living entity having that mentality can remain in the spiritual world perpetually. But as we know, we are marginal energy, we are prone to be affected by the material energy. Prone to be attracted to enjoy separately from Krishna. And if we give in to that tendency, then we end up here in the material world. We end up taking birth in the material world. Bhagavatam says that generally, when a living entity takes birth, first he gets a human form or a form of a demigod. There's a verse in the fourth canto which states that. 4:29:4, for those who are interested. So generally, the living entity is getting a human birth, and this gives him the opportunity to immediately go back to the spiritual, to engage in devotional service, and as a result go back to the spiritual. But if he doesn't listen to the instructions of scriptures and saintly persons, then he ends up engaging in sinful activity, materialist or just materialistic activity. There are many pious karmis in Vedic society who are following certain scriptural injunctions, certain moral standards, religious standards, etc. So, if one is a pious person, he can get elevation to heavenly planets, but it's still materialistic. Huh? It's still materialistic. Keeps one bound up in a cycle of birth and death. The good karma runs out after some time, and then he falls down. And like this, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanjeev Guru Krishna Prasad Yupai Bhakti Lata. The living entities are wandering throughout the universe. But a fortunate one, by the grace of Guru and Krishna, he gets the Bhakti Lata Bij. So to be able to take birth as a human being, this is a very good birth. So right from the start, that possibility is there of finishing one's material business very quickly and going back to the spiritual world. But if one doesn't do it, if he doesn't listen, if he just engages in material activities, then he'll have to take birth again and again and again. And it's very difficult to get out from that cycle of birth and death. But, the material world is structured in such a way that although living entities may fall down, gradually they can work off their bad karma, they can come up again to human life, they can again get the opportunity for spiritual practice and going back to Godhead. So intelligent person, he should use that opportunity and, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's giving the detailed program for development of Krishna consciousness, ultimately for going back to the spiritual world. So there are rules and regulations to be followed by all the different varnas and ashramas. People are in different situations, at least, not unlimitedly different, but, there are broad categories of persons who have different abilities and propensities, and persons who are in different ages, different stages of their life. So like going through brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, like that. So there are maybe different rules for different persons who are in different varnas and different ashramas. But the real essence, of course, is the practice of Krishna consciousness. So say for householders, Prabhupada recommended they should have an altar at home, they should offer their food to Krishna, take prasadam, they should chant Hare Krishna at home, they should study the books at home. Of course, if they live near the temple, if they can come to the temple, that's even better. But if not, at least at home, have some spiritual program. And then, of course, householders, they have responsibility to generate offspring, to work, to maintain their offspring. So they're, they're permitted to have land, house, property accumulated, in other words, for the sake of creating an environment, a protected environment, let's say, for the children. Because children are very, as we mentioned, sensitive, very, defenseless. So they need that kind of, protection, physical protection from their parents, you know, affection and you know, maintaining them, and also just some sort of place or house where they can, whatever, if it's a bird, it's a nest, but I mean, if it's a human being, a house like that, apartment, and so this all requires, you know, this is all responsibility, burden, we can say. In some cases, people even consider headache. It's a great headache, but you know, that's a responsibility, that's a duty of grihastha, and grihasthas are also considered a backbone of society. Most people in society are grihasthas, they're married. But then for, you know, for sadhus or sannyasi or vanaprastha, rules are different. Because we in Kali Yuga can't follow all of them. Like the rules for vanaprastha, if you read, you know, go and live in the forest, your nails will grow long, don't cut your nails, don't cut your hair, wear a tree bark. So, this is not, you know, Prado or whatever. Dior, you don't get Dior tree bark. we're not even capable of, you know, collecting the tree bark. We're not trained at all. It's not possible in Kali Yuga, this kind of, following these kind of injunctions. Of course, we have sannyasis, but even then, the sannyasis are not following the same, you know, rigid austerities. Say, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was just lying on the floor, no covering, no mat, nothing. And as Jagannanda Pandit once, he brought some, you know, nice sort of mattress stuffed with cotton, pillow and mattress for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu was lying on the ground, you know, and in his ecstasies he would be grinding his head and banging his head on the floor, on the wall or whatever. You know, so the devotees were naturally feeling concerns. He brought, you know, nice mattresses. It's probably nothing as fancy as we have nowadays, but still it was something. But Mahaprabhu rejected it. He became very angry, you know. Why don't you bring a bedstead for me to sleep on, you know? Nowadays, most of the sannyasis, they're traveling here and they will sleep in a bed, isn't it? Some always sleep on the floor, but Prabhupada himself, he used a bed. And just no covering. Finally, Sarup Damodar, he got some old cloth of the Lord, and then he got some leaves, and he kind of tore the leaves apart and he stuffed them into the old cloth and, you know, tied it up somehow and convinced Mahaprabhu to rest on that. But Jagannanda once, he bought sandalwood oil for the Lord. And he gave it to Govinda. Govinda said that Jagannanda's brought me sandalwood oil to rub on your head. And Lord Chaitanya got very angry, you know. People will criticize me. I'm using a perfumed oil. And take it to the temple and tell Jagannanda to take it to the temple of Lord Jagannath, and it can be burned there in the lamps. You know, didn't have electricity in those days. They had, you know, these, you know, ghee lamps. So they had a ghee in there or some oil. Could put oil like that. So Mahaprabhu was thinking this would be nice for Lord Jagannath, and you know, sandalwood oil. Fragrance will be there in the temple. And he, so Govinda gave the pot of oil back to Jagannanda with that instruction, and Jagannanda became very angry, of course, and he smashed oil in the courtyard. He said, I didn't bring any oil, and stormed off and locked himself in his room for days. Mahaprabhu himself had to finally go and knock and say, please come and cook for me today. Finally convinced him to to get up and to cook, and took bath. He cooked and then was offered, and Lord Chaitanya He wanted Jagannath to come and sit with me and take prasad. He wanted to see that he actually took them. But he said, Jagannath said, no, I'll take later. And then Mahaprabhu, he went to take rest. And he told Govinda, you check that he's taking. Govinda went and to check it. You take prasad now. And Jagannath said, no, I want to feed the Ramaya. Some other devotees had helped him to cook there. So he said, I want to feed them first and then I'll take him. So Govinda had to go keep checking, but finally saw after at the end Jagannath took prasad. So he reported to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu, he was relieved. But anyway, we see that example that he didn't want to have any kind of, oil or, comfortable situation. Whereas, in our situation, it's different. Prabhupada, he also used sandalwood sometimes, and he had massage every day. That's usually mustard oil massage. But might have put some sandalwood on the head or whatever of occasion. Not as a regular thing, but of occasion. So, there's difference between, the level of austerities that were performed in previous times and that were expected and that can be seen nowadays. But still, the general rule is there, for sannyasis, for vanapastas, for grihastas, a little bit different, but the essence is the chanting of Hare Krishna, hearing from the scriptures, serving the deity, serving the devotees, preaching Krishna consciousness. So it can be done from every ashram, and it should be encouraged. These activities should be encouraged. Understood, the grihastas will have to work, and they have many family responsibilities, but still some part of the time has to be dedicated for that spiritual practice. Otherwise, the human form of life is wasted. And if one, is not in grihastha life, then he has more time and he should engage himself more fully in, not only more fully, but fully in practices of hearing, chanting, preaching, and, serving, full-time service within ISKCON or within a temple. In this way, we can follow these examples of saintly persons, sadhus, that are given here in the Shastra, like a honeybee looking for nectar. And the nectar is the chanting of the holy names, the nectar is the association of devotees, hearing from the scriptures and rendering service. This is the nectar. So we should always be seeking for that nectar and distribute that nectar as broadly as possible. This will make our life successful, and it will help others to make their life successful, and it incidentally will give us the real happiness that we're looking for. This will give us a taste of the nectar for which we're always anxious, as it said in the Shikshastakam, isn't it? Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadevagni Nivapanam Shaya Karabha Chandrikavatarana Vidyavadu Jivanam Anandam Budivardhanam Pratipadam Purnamritasvadhanam Sarvatma Snapanam Paramvijayati Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Paramvijayati Sri Krishna Sankirtan. So, all glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years, extinguishes the fire of conditioned life of repeated birth and death, and it enables us to taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. So we are looking for happiness, we are looking for pleasure, we are looking for nectar, and we may be seeking it out in so many places. Different species are seeking it out in different ways. The hogs are seeking it out in stool. But that is not the place to find nectar. That is not nectar. That is madness, that is illusion, but that is their conditioning. Nectar, real nectar, is Krishna consciousness. That is available in human society. Therefore, we should be greedy to taste that nectar. That should be that greed. Not a selfish greed, but it's a greed to be Krishna conscious and give Krishna, share it with others. Not to hoard it for oneself, but to, you know, share it and relish it together with others. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Okay, Hare Krishna, 9 o'clock, we're finished. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Mora Premanandi.